You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm David Hyde.
I'm Marcy Silman. When rock musician Alex Chilton died in 2010 at the age of 59, Spin magazine declared that, in essence, Chilton had invented indie and independent rock. Rolling Stone said pretty much the same thing, but Alex Chilton died in relative obscurity.
His commercial peak was back in the 1960s when he had six top 10 hits with the Box Tops, most notably The Letter.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Love that song. By the end of the 60s, Alex Chilton's pop stardom was over, but it was only the beginning of an influential career marked by an unwillingness to bow to the demands of commercial music. His legion of admirers included Ray Davies of the Kinks. Tom Waits declared him the Thelonious Monk of the rhythm guitar.
In the 1980s, indie rock stars The Replacements wrote a tribute song, Alex Chilton. It imagined children by the millions waiting for Alex Chilton. Well, millions may not be waiting for Alex Chilton, but the cloud of obscurity may be lifting. Last year saw the release of the documentary film Nothing Can Hurt Me about his influential band Big Star.
Now there's a biography called A Man Called Destruction, The Life and Times of Alex Chilton, from Box Tops to Big Star to Backdoor Man. The author's Holly George Warren. She told our colleague Ross Reynolds how she explains Alex Chilton to people who may have heard his music but might not know his name.
Depending on kind of the age and look of the person, not to try to stereotype people, but I either start humming a few bars and singing a few lines of The Letter, of course, which was his big hit at age 16 with the Box Tops, or if they seem a little more kind of hipsterish type, I will start maybe singing September Girls. His great Big Star song, or if they seem to be a TV viewer, I'll mention That 70s Show and the theme song In the Street, which he wrote, which was on the first Big Star album. Or I'll maybe mention he produced The Cramps, did Bangkok in the punk era. I mean, there's really so many different things that he did. And then my neighbor, who's a big jazz buff, who's pushing 70, I'll mention that he was a great interpreter of songs originally sung by, you know, the likes of Frank Sinatra and Chet Baker and some really beautiful jazz standards. So it really, you know, the guy did so many things that you can't really categorize him musically.
And yet not known by millions. The book's titled A Man Called Destruction, which was the title of his last album of original songs. And why is that title very true about the way he dealt with his career?
Well, Alex never wanted to stay in one place musically. He had a very restless artistic soul, and he loved music. At heart, he was a real fanboy and would get really excited about different sonic ideas that he'd run across and things like that. So to kind of paraphrase Picasso, to create, you must first destroy, Alex would sometimes have to try to wipe the slate clean of what he had been doing to start a new path for himself musically. And, of course, you know, he ran into obstacles, like lots of rabid fans that wanted him to keep doing Big Star songs, for example, when he was very happy doing jazz standards or R&B, obscure R&B covers and things like that, which, of course, interestingly, is what he started out doing as a kid, as a teenager, doing R&B covers.
Where did this strain in jazz come from?
He grew up in this incredibly unique household in Memphis, Tennessee. His father had been a jazz musician in the 30s before settling down and becoming a businessman selling lighting. And when they had a tragic loss in the family, Alex's oldest brother passed away tragically, had a seizure in the bathtub and drowned, and it just totally tore the family up. So they moved from the suburbs into inner city, midtown Memphis, bought this big old house. His mother opened an art gallery with modern art on the walls downstairs, and the father started having jazz salons basically, you know, several nights a week in the home. So Alex grew up hearing jazz musicians performing downstairs every night. His father had lots of jazz records, and I mean, some of his earliest influences were Glenn Miller, you know, Ray Charles, Chet Baker, all this kind of music that his father had around the house.
pop stardom came to him at a very early age of 16 with the Box Tops, and then his attempted next act, Big Star, just completely fell apart. And he had a kind of a very indifferent attitude towards rock and roll fame. He said something about, I wouldn't care about selling 100,000 records. If I could sell 10,000 records, that could be more important to me. What was his relationship towards rock and roll fame?
He really didn't have anything nice to say about fame. You know, I think there's another quote that I found that Alex said something like he was kind of glad he got the fame out of the way early on as a kid, because and also the thing about it was, I think it rang shallow to him. It seemed very superficial, because he really, I don't think, felt he deserved the fame. It was such a fluke that the letter was a huge hit in 1967 that I don't think it rang true, like an honest artistic achievement to him.
I'm talking to Holly George Warren about her book called A Man Called Destruction, The Life and Music of Alex Chilton, From the Box Tops to Big Star to Backdoor Man. When one listened to Big Star after their heyday, a lot of people were just kind of knocking themselves on the side of the head and asking, why didn't this band get big? They had terrific songs, terrific vocals, really interesting arrangements. What happened?
It was really just a matter of timing. At the time, 1972, when Number One Record came out, if you think back to what was happening then, it was a lot of progressive rock. Yes, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, a lot of kind of blues rock, Humble Pie, Zeppelin, that kind of stuff. And on the surface, Big Star had this kind of, you know, Beatlesque harmonies and layered guitars and kind of, you know, what later became known as power pop.
Years ago, my heart was set to live. Oh, and I've been trying hard against unbelievable odds. It gets so hard in times like now to hold on. The way to be stuck right at my side is God.
But at the same time, it wasn't kind of lightweight pop that you would still hear on AM radio, which was the predominant vehicle for hit records at that time still. However, you know, there was this big divide growing between what was on AM radio and what was on FM radio. So the cooler, heavier kind of stuff was on FM. And a lot of stations thought, oh, well, they're too poppy for FM. I interviewed some of the DJs from NEW, the big New York City FM station, and they're like, you know, one DJ thought that Big Star was cool, but the other thought they were too poppy. You know, the Raspberries, who were on Capitol Records, did have a hit with Go
Big
All
hit
the
record.
Way. Yeah, Go All the Way. That was an AM radio hit. And they, you know, Capitol had the marketing and muscle to get that song played on the radio. Unfortunately for Big Star, they were on Stax, who was known for, at that time, Isaac Hayes, Hot Buttered Soul. Not you know, a white boy band, you know, playing Beatlesque kind of melodies. So the distributors of those records had a hard time getting them into the right stores for the people looking for them, and radio stations weren't really playing them, and the ones that were, when they couldn't find them in the stores, stopped playing them. So it was just this horrible, vicious circle of failure, basically.
You mentioned that he was only 59 when he died, but you had the feeling that by that time in his life, he'd kind of was able to accept the legacy of the Box Tops and the legacy of Big Star and be more comfortable with it than he maybe had been as a younger man.
One of his, well, I think it was his last vocal recording, was with one of his heroes, Ray Davies of the Kinks, who had lived for a while in New Orleans, and he and Alex had become friendly. And, you know, Alex was playing Kinks songs when he was 15 years old, you know, so it was so cool that he and Ray became friendly when, sadly, Ray was shot in the leg during a robbery attempt in New Orleans, and Alex lent him his guitar, etc. So Alex went over with Big Star to do a show in London and called up Ray, who had invited him to come see the famous Conk studio where many of the Kinks recordings were made. He went over there and they ended up recording together. Alex did Till the End of the Day, which literally he'd been doing since he was a teenager, that song, and Set Me Free. So it was just this feeling of coming full circle that he did those songs. They were beautiful recordings. And he also chatted with Ray, and Ray reported to me in an interview and actually wrote about it in his book, also Americana, that Alex talked to him about he was at a point where playing some old songs from 30 years before, he felt good about it. He, you know, it kind of helped him feel like a young man singing those songs. And I don't think that was always true. I think in earlier years, maybe they had too many troubled memories with them. But now he accepted, you know, some of the harder times he'd had associated with those songs.
Holly George Warren's the author of A Man Called Destruction, The Life and Times of Alex Chilton, From Box Tops to Big Star to Backdoor Man. She'll be speaking at Elliott Bay Books on Capitol Hill tomorrow night at 7:30. We're going to leave you with a song that's been described as capturing the aching innocence of adolescence. Here's the Big Star song, 13 on the record from KUOW.
Won't you let me walk you home from school? Won't you let me meet you at the pool? Maybe Friday I can get tickets for the dance. Now take you. Ooh. Won't you tell your dad, get off my back? Tell him what we said about painted black. Rock and roll is here to stay. Come inside, well, it's okay. Now shake.